Welcome to the Gilt Edge Soccer Marketing Office Shootout, where we talk about the evolving world of the American soccer business. There's the whistle. Let's kick this thing off.
All right, we're back here with John and Dylan talking MLS off-field developments heading into the new season. One of the bigger developments from the league itself as we head into the new season is a change in the scheduling format. John, what are your thoughts on this updated schedule format?
I think the MLS schedule has been a topic of conversation since the beginning of the league, right? I mean, I think it's one of those things that never goes away and probably won't for a while. But it's usually related to the discussion of should we go to the international calendar, which obviously is not happening. But I do think it's interesting that this year the league has essentially truncated the season by a month. So you've gone from a season that starts in March and goes all the way through to Christmas to a season that starts in March, runs for 8 months, and for most teams will be done in October. Playoffs will then take us into November. So you've got an 8 month, 9 month including playoff season, which again is truncated by one whole month. So if I just step back and think about it from a product standpoint, you're essentially taking your product off the shelves for 1 month of the year. And, you know, is that a good thing? I'm not sure if it necessarily is. I certainly agree with some of the challenges that I think the league experienced in the last few seasons in terms of the elongated playoff schedule, you know, kind of dragging out the end of the season as opposed to ending with a boom. So I think the reasons why they've cut the season short and condensed the playoff schedule make total sense to me. But like a lot of things in MLS, I think there's no easy solutions. There's pros and cons to every decision you make. And I'll be curious to see what the impact actually is of taking the league back by a whole month in 2019.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting to note that a lot of these clubs within their DA teams or just in youth soccer in general, they play a lot more similar to what you would see in Europe. For example, kids start playing their fall season in August, which runs usually to about November, and then they take a winter break, and then they come back in February and play through to May. So it's kind of interesting that you see kids play a lot similar schedule to what we see in Europe as opposed to what you see in MLS.
Yeah, actually, now you say that, it reminds me of some of the very early discussions we used to have in MLS about scheduling, and I think there was certainly a sentiment of we need to build a schedule that avoids all of the other big leagues. And we would look at everybody else's schedule.
It's hard though, right? Because the North American landscape of professional sports is so crowded. So it's like trying to find a place to sort of slot everything. It's not easy.
Yeah, it's not easy. But I think if I look back on it, we were maybe a little bit over-focused on trying to avoid the other sports leagues. And then there was always that counter opinion that said, wait a sec, we should not focus on trying to avoid the other leagues. We should focus on trying to synchronize with our own sport, which, you know, is a reference to the youth playing schedule, which was your point, Dylan. So I don't know if that's necessarily changed. You know, fast forward 20 years, we still have the same challenge of synchronizing with our own playing entity that we did two decades ago.
One of the other things, like the regular season ends in MLS and then playoffs are literally 3 days later. So at the front end of the playoffs, it's like they jump right in. But then on the back end, where it just drags on so much. Yeah. See, now that in theory should be alleviated because you're sort of truncating, but you're also eliminating the home and away series, which is nice, so there's fewer games.
That's the problem. There's way too much time between games.
Yeah.
It takes them forever to play half a dozen games.
Yeah, at that point, you're like, you almost forget that the playoffs are even going on.
Yeah.
Which is, if you're a league, that's not what you want. Switching gears, let's talk about another big development. Not just this offseason. It's certainly been a change over the past few years, and that is the media landscape. Either of you guys have any thoughts on the developments in the media landscape?
Yeah, I'll jump in on this for sure. I mean, the media, this isn't even a soccer discussion, right? I mean, this is a sports industry discussion. So soccer is just one of many, many sports that are feeling the implications of this, you know, massive disruption shift in the media landscape caused by the emergence of streaming platforms. I do think it's perhaps a little more interesting within the soccer space for a couple of reasons. I think first and foremost, when you think about who is the perfect cord cutter, you know, streaming consumer, I think the soccer audience pops to the top of that list, you know, pretty easily. Young, millennial, you know, tech forward, globally aware. So in terms of an audience fit for a streaming consumer, I think soccer checks all of the boxes. And then I also think secondarily from a rights fee standpoint, look, some of these other established American sports leagues have higher thresholds financially for the acquisition of their, you know, local team media rights than MLS teams do. So in terms of an attractive early adoption sports platform for a streaming partner, like an ESPN or a Flow Sports or a YouTube TV, I do think MLS teams, you know, certainly have a lot to offer. And we're seeing it, you know, all over the place in terms of, you know, teams now partnering with, you know, one of those aforementioned, you know, entities. But there's no one-size-fits-all solution. I think if you look at the Seattles of the world, I think Salt Lake is in this boat as well, maybe even Orlando. They've added a streaming partner, but they've added it to an existing broadcast relationship. So it's almost like the fans in those markets get the best of both worlds, right? They get the exposure that a traditional media partner can bring to the table, plus the convenience and the added exposure of the streaming partner. The one that is really interesting to me is DC, where they've essentially gone from, you know, 2 decades of being on network television to an exclusive English language, Spanish language, all mediums deal with Flow Sports. And I'm sure there are lots of reasons why they've decided to go that direction. Revenue and rights fees that they've received is probably top of that list. But, you know, in simple terms, you've gone from network television exposure to a relatively small footprint of reach through Flow Sports. And, you know, for a young league that's still trying to grow in relevance, restricting access to your local television local market events to that magnitude, that's a big gamble, I think, for DC, and time will tell whether that proves to be something that the fans embrace or not.
Yeah, so you were just talking about Flow Sports, so just staying on that subject for a second. So obviously there's a deal in place with Flow Sports to broadcast the or to stream the DC United games, but I think also as part of that deal, there Flow Sports is taking on the task of producing shoulder content for the team. So, you know, whether it's Wayne Rooney or whoever, you know, that network is also going to be the home of additional content for the team throughout their season. There's also a great example, and Dylan, I know you're chomping at the bit to jump in here on this, but there's another great example of a streaming partner who has taken on a team and is producing great content on top of it. So what do you have to say about LAFC and what they're doing?
Yeah, I think what LAFC and ESPN Plus are doing is really a new avenue for MLS and its clubs to sort of be transparent and attract fans to this new world of rich content. You see it with Netflix in the Sunderland Till I Die series. You see it with Amazon and the Manchester City series. There's definitely a desire from fans to be able to see this rich content that goes behind the scenes from business transactions. So, like, what's it like in the war room when you're drafting players at the Super Draft? Or what's it like when Bob Bradley is putting together his team? Or what's his first practice like? And that's what LAFC is really showing everybody. And I definitely think it's definitely an interesting turn because, as far as I remember, I haven't seen a series with this much effort put into it from a broadcaster to really show fans what it's like to be in a club from its beginning through its first season. There's a lot of really great moments, and I definitely expect fans to love this kind of content, but to expect more of it. I think the interesting thing about Major League Soccer is that there are a ton of interesting storylines that they could really take from what LAFC did, but maybe look at David Beckham's first season and all of the turmoil they've been going through to really get into the league. So I think there's all of these interesting storylines that MLS presents that maybe other entities don't, that fans would really love to see. So.
Yeah, we've seen MLS as a league, or some of the teams, definitely try some richer content in the past. I mean, I remember one of the things I remember most is probably during RSL's run for the CONCACAF Champions League title. You know, the MLS for RSL movement and some of the video content that, I don't remember if it was the league specifically or if it was the team pumping out those videos, but it's some of the early, that wasn't that long ago, but some of the earlier, richer content that the league sort of put an actual focus behind putting out. And look, rich content is great because it gives you behind the scenes access, which, you know, as a normal fan sitting in the stands, you're not going to get that. So if you can get the team, you know, walking off the bus down in Monterey to play the biggest game in franchise history, you know, that's great stuff. And this LAFC thing is perfect because, I mean, they're not new anymore, but they're a new team as of last year. So seeing them being built from the ground up is a certainly a unique experience.
Think about it from the broadcaster standpoint. I mean, yes, you know, when Amazon decides that they want to do a series with Man City, they know Man City's going to have some good content, but you have no idea that season is ultimately going to end up the way that it did, you know, with them obviously, you know, winning the championship and maximum points, 100 points and so forth. You know, when Netflix decides to do the Sunderland series, I mean, you have no idea that their seasons are actually going to go the way that they did.
Yeah.
And even when, you know, ESPN decide that they're going to, you know, film behind the scenes with LAFC, you have no idea that the season's going to pan out the way that it did. So in all three of those situations, I think the common theme is unbelievable storylines.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, storylines that, you know, every soccer fan, every sports fan, and even people beyond, you know, our industry can find entertaining. I mean, it's just great storylines. It's just great content. So I guess my point is, they got all three of those guys kind of got lucky a little bit that all three of their bets, you know, certainly paid off in spades.
You know, I think what's interesting is, you know, you could totally see one of the newer entities like DAZN looking at Inter Miami. Obviously, there's a bit of predictability kind of against your point where we've seen where they started so long ago and the turmoil that they've gone through. So there's a storyline there in itself. But there's also their MLS years next season when they get here. What's going to happen? Are they going to sign a sexy superstar to come in? And what's that storyline going to be if you get a Antoine Griezmann who's still at the top of his game, who could really, you know, lift the league itself? So, I mean, I think, yeah, there's opportunities all across the league for these entities to really get into the nitty-gritty with Major League Soccer and the storylines that they can provide.
Yeah, I mean, if you're DAZN and you're looking for a way to enter the sport, for example, in the U.S., I mean, Inter Miami would be a perfect sort of launching pad, I would think, right? Because you've got a high-profile city, you've got a high-profile owner, several. And, look, there are stories like LAFC. You've got a stadium opening, which you can add to the mix, which is obviously big in terms of pomp and circumstance and rich content. I mean, there's player signings, as Dylan said. So, look, it certainly presents a unique opportunity for someone out there.
Yeah, especially, I mean, Inter Miami itself is, Miami as a market is interesting. So if you can attract Miami locals who, you know, cover basically the whole South America, Central America, yeah, I mean, that's an interesting market that you could really get into. Just by playing into what their local MLS team is going to be.
Thanks for listening to the second episode of our MLS preview. On our next episode, we'll talk about MLS's cultural growth and how the league can continue to attract new fans. Did you know we have a bi-weekly newsletter? If you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest in the soccer marketing world, visit GiltEdgeSoccer.com as soon as you're done listening to this episode and sign up today to have content delivered straight to your inbox.